The account of Jesus' journey onto the cross is one we all know well. In this one event, we have the startling contrast of Jesus' innocence with our guilt. No matter what angle you look at, there's another facet of the brokenness of the human heart on display as the events of Good Friday flow from one tear to the next. And if you read and understand properly, you'll see that nothing can distract us from the brutality and the betrayal inflicted on Christ. But there is one man. There's this one character that really doesn't seem to belong. It seems that he could be cut out of the events of that day and nothing would be lost. Of course, he does belong by the simple fact that he was there and he's part of the historical record. But still, his part of the story just seems inconsequential. One might consider his place in the Good Friday account to be as important as the shepherd in the Christmas pageant. He's merely scenery to the drama. No words does he speak. He doesn't do anything. But then again, maybe there's more to this man's presence in the story than we might consider at first. But before we meet him, we have to catch up with Jesus as he stands before Pilate for the second time. Beginning in Matthew 27, verse 11, we read, "Meanwhile, Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' 'You have said so,' Jesus replied. When he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate asked him, 'Don't you hear the testimony they're bringing against you?' But Jesus made no reply, not even a single charge, to the great amazement of the governor. And Jesus answers Pilate's question with his own words, 'You have said so.'" Now, Jesus declares that he is the Messiah, but he quotes from Pilate. But then we have these accusations of the chief priests and the elders. Matthew doesn't tell us exactly what they are, but Luke helps us out. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this man subverting our nation. He opposes payment of taxes to Caesar and claims to be Messiah, a king." The only thing that's true is that Jesus did claim to be Messiah. But as we talked about on Palm Sunday, the kind of Messiah Jesus professed to be wasn't one that was at war with Rome. Jesus was at war with sin. And Jesus' rule would bring peace, not war. Pilate wouldn't be concerned about this kind of a king. These accusations are unfair and untrue and over the top. They were designed to force Pilate into action. Rome takes their taxes and the exclusiveness of their rule seriously. And if these charges were true, Jesus would be condemned to die on a cross. But what surprises Pilate most was that Jesus remained silent. He makes no reply, not even to a single charge. Pilate pushes Jesus. He says, "Don't you hear what they're saying about you? These are serious charges. Aren't you going to defend yourself?" But Jesus remained silent to the amazement of Pilate. Probably takes a lot to amaze Pilate. He's seen it all, I'm sure. You know, certainly Pilate's seen a lot of pleading in his life. He's heard a lot of people blaming and finding fault and justifying themselves. But I doubt he's ever encountered anyone who just stood silent before him, particularly when they were being accused of such serious charges. What does it feel like to not have to justify yourself? What does it feel like to not care what other people think? What does it feel like to be so confident in oneself that you don't have to defend your actions or even deny trumped-up charges. What does it feel like to just allow your life to speak instead of your tongue? I don't know how it feels to you. The silence was startling. Can't help but think of Isaiah 53:7. He was oppressed and afflicted, yet he did not open his mouth. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep before its shearers is silent, so he did not open his mouth. Matthew tells us that Pilate knows exactly why the religious leaders brought Jesus before him. Verse 18 of chapter 27, we read, "For he," referring to Pilate, "knew it was out of self-interest that they had handed Jesus over to him." Pilate knew the religious leaders were jealous of Jesus. They were jealous of his popularity. What does it take to kill a man? What terrible circumstances are required? What must one do before the thought of murder bubbles up in the human heart? Surely it must be a terrible crime of the most vicious sort. Well, according to the account of Jesus' trial, all it took was jealousy. All it took was Jesus' popularity. All it took was people like him more. Now, of course, that wasn't all that motivated the religious leaders. There were other things that could be pointed to and leaned on for justification. But what really all of this comes down to is just simply this. The human heart never really leaves the schoolyard. The fact that they like him more was enough to allow murder to reign. A sinless man who loved and healed and helped was hated with a murderous hate because he was more popular. How insecure and dangerous is the human heart? And now we come to this one man, this silent distraction that doesn't really seem to fit into the account. He is the last-ditch effort by Pilate to manipulate the situation without fighting the religious leaders directly. Pilate would use the crowd against the religious leaders and get Jesus released, and there was nothing that the religious leaders could say. Pilate knew how popular Jesus was. Clearly the crowd would choose Jesus over Barabbas, and the problem of condemning an innocent man would be solved. Or the problem of giving the religious leaders what they wanted would be solved. I'm not sure exactly what motivated Pilate. Well, you know what happens. Pilate stands on this stage and he enacts the tradition of releasing a prisoner during the festival. This is Roman PR working its magic. Throw the public a bone every once in a while and maybe they'll be more manageable. Well, this time he gives the crowd a choice. In fact, he gives them what he thinks is the easiest choice in the world. We have two Jesuses to choose from. Jesus Barabbas or Jesus the Christ. Pilate's stacking the deck. He goes out of his way to remind the people that Jesus is the Christ. He's their Messiah. Just in case they weren't sure of who they need to vote for. Meanwhile, we're told that Barabbas is a notorious prisoner, according to Matthew. Mark labels him a rebel who committed murder in the insurrection. And Luke confirms Mark's claim by saying that Barabbas was a man who had been thrown into prison for an insurrection started in the city and for murder. This is no contest. There's no choice. Barabbas is full of hatred and violence and self-promotion. And then there's Jesus. The one who has healed the sick, the one who was taught with greater authority than the rabbis, the one who raised the dead, the one who touched the untouchable and gave sight to the blind. This is no contest. This is no choice. Pilate knows there's no reason for Jesus to really be brought before him. He knows it's all about the pride and the power of the religious leaders. He knows they're wrong. So he takes the choice out of their hands and he puts it in the hands of the people. He knows how popular Jesus is with the public. He knows who the public will choose. But just like Brexit and the U.S. election, the people don't do what's expected. They are a crowd, after all, and crowds can be fickle. And with some serious campaigning by the religious leaders, they choose Barabbas. Public opinion isn't always the right opinion. Who do you want? It should have been obvious. Barabbas deserved to be a prisoner. He was a man who should be on death row. He murdered people. He's a bad man. He's a thug and a crook. He deserves the change. He deserves the crucifixion. Who do you want? Not Barabbas. How about Jesus? The one who healed, restored, delivered, opened blind eyes, opened deaf ears, set people free. What has Jesus done to deserve any of this? Give us Barabbas. But why? Give us Barabbas. They unlock Barabbas from his chains and he walks off the platform. If he feels anything for Jesus, he doesn't show it. I really don't think Barabbas cares. I don't think he cares that because of Jesus, he was being set free. All that mattered was that he was free. Now, I want us to think about this for a second. Who freed Barabbas? And who condemned Jesus? Was it the crowd? Was it Pilate? Was it the religious leaders that worked the crowd? Yes, yes, and yes. Is that everyone? No. Peter on the day of Pentecost had this to say about Jesus being condemned. This man was handed over to you by God's deliberate plan and foreknowledge. And you, with the help of wicked men, put him to death by nailing him to the cross. Was God surprised that Barabbas just happened to be on the stage with Jesus? No. Was this choice of Barabbas or Jesus presented by Pilate something that wasn't on God's radar? No. The Father knew that Jesus would be treated like Barabbas so that he could treat Barabbas like Jesus. Barabbas thought it was the people who had set him free, but it wasn't. God knew what would happen and God allowed it to happen. It was part of his deliberate plan and foreknowledge, just as much as it was the choice of wicked men. What does this mean? It means that Barabbas isn't just a background scenery in a drama. Barabbas is a key player in this Good Friday drama because Barabbas' importance isn't in the fact that he actually does anything. He doesn't need to do anything. All he needs to do is walk free. Barabbas' importance isn't in what he did, although he was guilty. He was a criminal. He was a murderer. And more important still, his importance is in the fact that God does this amazing thing through Jesus on his behalf. That's why Barabbas is important. You see, more than anything else, it wasn't the people who set Barabbas free. It was the love of the Heavenly Father. Judah Smith declares, "When I look at the story, I realized who Barabbas really is. That's me. That's you. That's us." Paul puts it this way in Romans. We've already read it today. But God demonstrated His own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Ultimately, I know that Jesus walks off to the cross that I deserve. He paid the price for my sins because of God's amazing grace, because of God's incredible love. I am Barabbas. You are Barabbas. We are Barabbas. And we are free because Jesus went to the cross in our place. It is all Jesus. He did it. He went. He suffered. He died in our place. All we did was stand on the stage until the Father chose to release us and punish Him. It was the Father's plan and the Son's desire. And it's still Jesus. It will always be Jesus. It will never stop being Jesus. His blood is sufficient to save the sick, to sustain you through every challenge and every sin and every temptation. Jesus is enough. The only question remaining is, how do we feel standing on the stage with Pilate and with Jesus? Knowing that it wasn't just the crowd. It wasn't just Pilate. It wasn't just the religious leaders. God chose you over His Son. And ultimately, you must know, you need to know, that like Barabbas, you deserved the cross. You deserved the pain. You deserved it all because you were guilty. Don't let the significance of this day pass you by. Don't think this is something normal, something we do, something that's expected. You were declared guilty. You were destined for judgment. The predictable outcome of a life of sin was about to be played out. Then the God of the universe looked at you and He looked at His Son and He saw Jesus' perfect righteousness. He saw Jesus' total innocence and He saw your sin more clearly than you do yourself. But then He chose you. Not because He didn't love His Son. No, He loved the Son. And the Son loved the Father. But that love was the vehicle that placed Jesus on that stage with you and Pilate. And that love extended and expressed to you, allowed the Father to choose you over Jesus so that Jesus could die in your place, taking upon Himself your guilt so that you could be set free. You are Barabbas. I am Barabbas. We are Barabbas.